The burst of patriotism following the September 11th attacks has everybody rethinking the significance of American symbols, particularly the Star Spangled Banner. Some people say the song is too militaristic. A school board in Madison, Wisconsin, instructed schools to use only an instrumental version. And just about everybody complains that the song is too hard to sing. But our linguist, Jeff Nunberg, isn't sure about the alternatives.
If you ask me, the Star Spangled Banner has gotten a bad rap. After all, those rockets and bombs were coming from the British ships that were bombarding Fort McHenry as Francis Scott Key watched helplessly from the harbor. The song celebrates America surviving a foreign attack, not launching one. Even so, I can understand why some people would as soon have an anthem with no war images at all. And the Star Spangled Banner does have insurmountable musical deficiencies. It's fun to cheer at a baseball game when a performer hits the high note on Land of the Free. But anthems ought to be songs that everybody can sing in unison, without requiring throat surgery afterwards. The reconsideration of the anthem has been in the air for a while. We seem to redefine our national symbols every 100 years or so. Most of the present apparatus of American patriotism was put in place around the turn of the 20th century. The Pledge of Allegiance was composed in 1892 by Francis Bellamy, a Boston socialist and Baptist minister. Actually, Bellamy had originally proposed having the pledge end with liberty, justice, and equality for all, but that was unacceptable to members of the Massachusetts Education Board who were opposed to giving women the vote. And it wasn't until 1916 that President Wilson issued an executive order that made the Star Spangled Banner our official national anthem, around the same time he proclaimed Flag Day a national holiday. In any case, people seem to feel it's time for a change. During the last few weeks of the Major League season, baseball teams were playing God Bless America at the seventh inning stretch, and a lot of people were treating it as if it were a real anthem, standing and removing their hats. I've always liked that song, particularly when I imagine the setting that Irving Berlin intended it for when he composed it in 1918, a Ziegfeld-style production number for an all-soldier musical review called Yip Yip Yap Hank. The song became famous in 1939 when Kate Smith recorded it with lush strings and brass. It's certainly the catchiest of all the contenders, and it would be fitting for America to have an anthem written on Tin Pan Alley. But we're not ready for that yet. The clear front runner for an anthem replacement is America the Beautiful, written back in 1893 by a Wellesley professor named Catherine Lee Bates. Willie Nelson closed the All-Star TV benefit on September 22nd by leading everybody in singing the song. And ABC News correspondent Lynn Scherr has a new book high on the bestseller lists with the title America the Beautiful, the stirring true story behind our nation's favorite song. No question, it is a likable song. It may not be stirring like Battle Hymn of the Republic, which is the only patriotic song that America's produced that could go elbow to elbow with the Marseillaise and Deutschland über alles if it came to a showdown in Rick's Cafe. But America the Beautiful is a sweet little tune, particularly when Ray Charles sings it. And it's a song you can join in on without self-consciousness. I can understand the appeal of the lyrics, too. It's partly that call for coast-to-coast brotherhood, but mostly it's those pretty landscape pictures, like a set of old chromolithograph postcards. But I'm troubled about the idea of making the song our national anthem. Maybe it's the overblown language with its contorted syntax and fulsome descriptions. You have to be wary of any verses that have that many adjectives in them, particularly adjectives like spacious, amber, purple, and fruited. If we have to have adjectives, I'll take free and brave. This isn't just a stylistic quibble. That overwriting is a symptom of the late 19th century sentimentalism about a vanishing rural America. It's easy for modern Americans to sympathize with that, given our own concerns about the threatened environment. But it puts the essence of the country far from the daily lives that most of us live. When I was a kid in Manhattan, I remember singing about purple mountains and waves of grain and thinking that America must be a distant place somewhere out beyond New Jersey. And the sublime landscape of the song doesn't have any more to do with the country that most of us inhabit now, a land of spacious parking lots and amber traffic signals. Of course, we all love purple mountains, even if we aren't all fortunate enough to see them out of our kitchen windows. But there's something reductive about making our landscape the focus of our anthem. Any country can do that. The Swiss sing about the Alps going bright with splendor. The Czechs sing about water bubbling across the meadows and pine woods rustling amongst the crags. The Brazilians sing about the sound of the sea and the light of heaven. And the Syrian anthem begins with a remarkable entomological trope. Syria's plains are towers in the heights, a land resplendent with brilliant suns, almost like a sky centipede. Anthems like that are particularly convenient for nations that change their form of government every so often. Landscapes don't have any politics. But the American experiment was supposed to be different. Our patriotism is about a nation, not a land. No other country tells its story as the history of a single regime. And some of that ought to be up front in the anthem we sing. I had a similar reaction to the administration's choice of the words homeland security rather than domestic security to describe the new office headed by Governor Ridge. I understand what they were getting at, given the shock of the attack on American soil. But even though homeland is a perfectly good English word, up to now we've never used it to describe our own country. It has an alien sound, like the German word Heimat. It's the word we use for peoples who feel an ancestral connection to a particular plot of ground. Whereas the idea of America isn't that it's a place that people come from, but a place that they come to. The Germans and Kurds and Ukrainians have homelands. We just have a nation and a flag.
Jeffrey Nunberg is the author of the new book, The Way We Talk Now, Commentaries on Language and Culture.